marinate on that for a minute.
Kia ora, talofa, namaste, haere mai, and welcome to this week's episode of the Niche Cache Variety Show. We are from the Niche Cache, theniche-cache.com. Got lots of Aotearoa sporting yarns and information on our website. And we also pick up the Patreon whānau, patreon.com/elnishcache, elnishcache. We've got plenty of Kiwi sports stuff on our Patreon podcast feed as well. Yesterday I did a Kiwi NRL Spotlight podcast, and we've just done our, well, today's one was about the All Whites and the Black Caps. So you can listen to some bonus NRL, All Whites and Black Caps content on our Patreon feed. Patreon is the best way to support the Niche Cache and all our content directly, as well as having the extra podcast there as well. Fresh vibes across all three formats. Got fresh vibes with the All Whites, got a funky Black Caps B team, smoking Sri Lanka. And what's happening in the NRL? What did I discuss? Well, you had old Zion Mai'u'u going nuts in the New South Wales Cup Warriors team. We got Selu Halasima, who apparently is 17 years old, and he had been playing SG ball. Then he played for the New South Wales Cup team Warriors out of Mangere East, Southern Cross Campus. That was pretty awesome. Leo Thompson started. Griffin Neem started. Lots of funky Kiwi NRL matters in the Patreon show on a Monday. And then we broke down the All Whites. Robust discussion about the All Whites planning and series against China. And of course, Black Caps. So big up all the Patreon whānau. We do have those extra podcasts and extra bits of information there every week on the Patreon feed. Shout out to the email newsletter as well. Every Monday I'm dropping Warriors information in that email newsletter, as well as anything else that pops up on my radar as far as cricket, men's and women's cricket and league, and any other stuff that I cover. The wildcard is drop some David Light thoughts that you'll probably hear in the variety show. You drop them on the Monday newsletter. Had some Kiwi football in the Monday newsletter as well. That comes out every Monday and Friday evening via Substack, thenichecache.substack.com, which is a bit more current eventy and more of a companion to the Niche Cache, the website, theniche-cache.com. So sign up to the email newsletter for extra Kiwi sporting information every Monday and Friday. Hit us up on the website, theniche-cache.com, and big up all the patrons keeping the Niche Cache alive and afloat. We appreciate you all, and if you do want to support the Niche Cache directly, join the Patreon whānau, patreon.com/elnishcache. Plenty of Kiwi sporting funk to discuss on today's variety show, but we need some mindfulness. Big man Ting, what do you got?
Well, how about a bit of mindfulness from Shunryu Suzuki from the old Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind? Well, this is the like little quotation at the start of a chapter about calmness, and the quotation goes, "For Zen students, a weed is a treasure."
Is that to like put a positive twist on a weed?
I suppose so. I didn't read the chapter. I just opened up for a good quotation somewhere. But I would imagine it's somewhere to do with like being able to, how would you describe it? Like if you can understand the less desirable aspects of nature, it puts into perspective the more desirable aspects of nature as well. So if you can see the weed, you can see the flower. And there was a little bit, I did actually read some of the next paragraph to try to get some context, and he sort of talked about how you don't notice the shining moon until there's like a cloud drifting across it, and then that cloud brings into focus the moon behind it, or there's another example he used that was something similar to that. I can't remember what it was, but you know, if you I guess it's also good training as well, isn't it, to learn to love a little bit of everything rather than picking and choosing and saying this thing is worthless, this thing is meaningful, because you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure, and it's all part of the same ecosystem, isn't it? So the weeds are serving their purpose, same as the flowers, right?
Yeah, you said it yourself. And this could have been your mindfulness, to be honest. You could have just hijacked it and come up with your own mindfulness here, because if you see the weed, you can see the flower.
Yeah.
And that is...
There you go.
Mad respect to old Suzuki, the bro, but I think we came across a more powerful nugget there. If you can see the weed, you can see the flower. Big up Aotearoa. I'm going to get the Kiwi Sports started, because I've got to highlight a champion. She's a big Donny of women's cricket. She's a big Donny of international cricket. And that is Amelia Kerr, who won the Women's Premier League Championship in India, the first women's T20 thing in India. She was part of the Mumbai Indians team. Some stats for you. 149 runs at a strike rate of 133. Excellent. 15 wickets and an average of 14. RPO of 6.45. Excellent. You know what's even more excellent than a pretty impressive performance in the WPL? The fact that this was Amelia Kerr's first time playing T20 cricket in the Women's Premier League for everyone. But Amelia Kerr, her first time, she won. She's a champion, first time around. To the best of my knowledge, that also happened in the Women's Big Bash League, where her first season with Brisbane Heat was a championship run. And of course, we know that Amelia Kerr is a key figure in the Wellington Blaze dynasty. So Amelia Kerr is basically the Kiwi T20 champion. That's what she does. She's a winning cricketer. Not translating to White Ferns wins on the major tournament stage just yet, but in her first Women's Premier League, in her first Women's Big Bash League, and in most Super Smash campaigns, Amelia Kerr is a pure champion, one of the best batters in the world, one of the best bowlers in the world, one of the best fielders in the world, pure championship mana. What do you got?
What I've got is a general sense of overwhelming optimism about the future of the All Whites football team. And I think we had, I don't know, I mean, there was some pressure coming in on the team coming into these games against China. There's just the lack of goals, the fact they hadn't qualified for the last World Cup, a couple, like the coaching scenario was a bit of a bummer situation. And they'd had this optimism about them before. Like, it was quite clear there was an under-20s team a couple years ago. They were leading into an Olympics team more recently, 2021, I think that was, the last Olympics. The 2019 under-20s, many of the same players across both those two squads. It was clear we had this generation of really talented players coming through, and enough of the older guys still hanging around to be able to complement them beautifully in a senior men's national team. We then had them, you know, a bit of a rough 2022 and all them things I mentioned, and it probably clouded over a little bit of that optimism. What I saw from them specifically in the second game against China, it all came rushing back. I was watching dudes playing great football. I was watching exciting young players, starting to see them get a bit of a handle on the old international football realms as well as they work up their cap count, and I'll talk about that a bit more in the vitamin stats. And I think no area of the park showed this better than the midfield, where you had Joe Bell currently playing for Brøndby in Denmark, Marco Stamenic currently playing for FC Copenhagen in Denmark, but soon to be playing for Red Star Belgrade in Serbia. Stamenic has already played Champions League. Joe Bell is playing for a team that's won Danish titles within the last couple of years. They're both at high levels. They're both extremely good players, and they're just... It's different, man. It's different gravy to what we've seen from All Whites teams in the past. And this team still has the players to be able to have, like, you know, they've got the big man target guy up front. They can hit Chris Wood with the crosses. They can target set pieces. They've got strong defenders who can bring that same kind of energy that All Whites teams in the past have been built upon, of just like no compromise centre backs. And they've still got that stuff, but they've also now got a couple midfielders in particular, and, you know, chuck a bit of Ryan Thomas in there if he can get back to full fitness enough to resume his international campaign. Chuck a bit of Sarpreet Singh in there sooner rather than later. that is, they've got the same ingredients as All Whites teams that have been successful in the past have had, and they've got midfielders who can control the ball, who are looking to receive under pressure, who can hold off tackles, who can press without possession, who can chip a stunning, perfect ball right into a dude's chest in the middle of his run, like Joe Bell did to set up Matt Garbutt for the second goal against China. All I see from watching a game like that is just optimism from what the All Whites can do. This, like, little bit of a hiccup along the way in 2022, but we're back on track thoroughly. And perhaps the hiccup was kind of what this team needed as well anyway. Maybe that's just natural stuff of adjusting to a higher level. Well, we're through that. We're on the train. The train's on the tracks. We're heading in one direction. Very, very, very excited for what this All Whites team can produce in the future, the way things have been going and with the players that they've got, in particular, skillful midfielders, man. We've never had this before.
All Whites also have T-Pain. Doing a lot of stuff, good stuff for the All Whites. So shout out to T-Pain. Also, big it up, Rachin Ravindra. Let's get statistical, and I want to get statistical about Rachin Ravindra. He scored 49 runs in the Black Caps' first ODI win over Sri Lanka. 49 runs down the order was pretty useful. Black Caps, they were bowled out for 274, so you take 49 runs off that, you're looking at definitely a lower total for sure, but it might not have mattered because, you know, Sri Lanka got rolled by a B-grade Black Caps team. But old Rachin Ravindra is batting down the order for the Black Caps. That's not what he does for Wellington, because he is Wellington's best batter. So the Black Caps B-grade ODI team has Wellington's best batter batting down the order, which is pretty good. Because Rachin Ravindra, he is Wellington's only batter this season who has scored over 500 runs. He's got two centuries in the Plunkett Shield. Tommy Blundell's got a couple. Nick Kelly's got a couple. Neither of them have 500 runs. Rachin Ravindra has 522 runs. Only Wellington batter with over 500 runs in the Plunkett Shield. In the Ford Trophy, Rachin Ravindra, he scored the most runs, 321 runs. Nick Kelly, he scored 305 runs. But Rachin Ravindra is the only Wellington batter with a Ford Trophy century this summer, and he's got two of them. So Rachin Ravindra is Wellington's best Ford Trophy batter with the most runs, two centuries. He's the only batter in the Plunkett Shield with over 500 runs, and he's coming in 7 for the Black Caps, which is pretty solid. I don't know about anyone else, but that feels pretty solid to me. What's your stat here?
Stat here, flowing off my takes about the All Whites, just to illustrate how young this All Whites team is. 17 players started games over the two matches against China. Only 5 of those 17 have more than 15 international caps. The first game included a debutant, Callan Elliott. Max Mata as well was playing just his second cap. Also included Tommy Smith making his 50th appearance and getting a red card in the process. That feels like a quiz question of the future of Tommy Smith getting sent off in his 50th game. Costa Barbarousis is even ahead of that. After these two games, he's at 54. However, those two didn't start in the second game. So in the second game, they didn't have anyone with 50-plus caps. Rojas and Boxall are closing in, though. Rojas 44, Boxall on 42. Obviously, Chris Wood still to return. Bill Tuilomo, another established lad who wasn't there. T-Pain himself is on 30-something as well. So there's relatively experienced guys. They might not be that experienced in caps, but they're certainly experienced in terms of having been around for a long time and played a lot of games at club level and whatever. But it's that core of players around the 10 to 15 cap mark right now who are all of a similar age, all learning the All Whites ropes together. This is like the future of the team for the next 10 years. This is where all that optimism comes from. It's Joe Bell, it's Marco Stamenich, Lubi Kakache, Matt Garbutt, Nando Pineker, Eli Just, Callum McCowart. It's early days for them, but you know what? Those guys, they used to be around the 0 to 5 caps, then it was 5 to 10 caps. Now we're in that 10 to 15 range. We're getting there slowly but surely, and these players are just getting better and better as they do, and the All Whites are hopefully going to continue to get better and better as these guys settle into key roles. I mean, Joe Bell captained them in the second game. That's already nuts for captaining a team when you're playing like your 14th appearance, I think it was, for Joe Bell. So that's the future of the All Whites right there.
Bit rough on T-Pain, or even T-Pain would get the... he's got the
captaincy.
I thought
Michael Boxall might have got it ahead of him, but you know.
Yeah, it's too far for T-Pain to come just to captain the New Zealand football team. The Warriors defeated the Bulldogs, and I'm getting deep into the Mangroves for this victory because I thought it was fabulous. The Warriors outgrinded. They ground them as well. They grounded the Bulldogs down, but they outgrinded the Bulldogs. And I think that is pretty interesting given the comparisons we've laid out between the Bulldogs, the Broncos, the Warriors, because the Bulldogs don't do a whole lot in attack. They got a big boot, they got a kick chase, fairly simple attacking game plan, but the Warriors are a better defensive team than the Bulldogs, and they're a better attacking team, and they feel like a better team than the Bulldogs. If you want some stats, we can get into some defensive stats here. Bulldogs are third for missed tackles in the NRL. The Bulldogs have four players in the top 20 for missed tackles this season in the NRL. Warriors are 12th for missed tackles, and they have no player in the top 50 for missed tackles. That's how you grind out a victory against the Bulldogs. But there was some other stuff that happened in this game that I think I was pretty interested in with regards to the differences between these two teams, because the Bulldogs kept hearing Monty Beetham go on about the rampaging outside backs of the Bulldogs doing a lot of hard graft out of their own defensive line. And yeah, sure, there was one great play where they just strolled up the middle of the field. But every time I said that, I looked at the set distance, it was like 20 metres. 25 metres. And the Bulldogs just kept kicking from deep in their own half. So I'm like, if your outside backs are that good, you should probably get some territory, and that might help instead of scoring your try off a kind of bullshit error. You know, Adokar, he's really fast. He gets around the outside. Big up to him. That was awesome. But they didn't spend a lot of time down the Warriors' end, and those outside backs, not as good as the Warriors. Because the Warriors' outside backs are just as powerful, but they also love a pass. You had passing Pompey. You had passing Vilea. They are also very robust, but they got good hands, they got good skill sets. If you get it deep into the Warriors Mangroves even further, Ali Leotard was fantastic in New South Wales Cup. Rocco Berry was fantastic in New South Wales Cup. All of those dudes have first 15 backgrounds, as well as a bit of league sprinkled in. And the difference between the Warriors outside backs and the Bulldogs outside backs is passing, is offloading, is skill. And the Warriors displayed that all game against the Bulldogs, which was good to see. Another wrinkle in this, Tohu Harris left the field early with a knee injury. He had 15 passes. No Bulldogs forward had more than 5 passes. So again, this is how the Warriors played their footy. Bulldogs, not much passing in that forward pack. Didn't really shift the Warriors around too much. Late in the game, Warriors pounce. Tohu Harris leaves the field. What happens? The Baldies take over. Jazz Tavanga, fantastic, robust, rugged. Dylan Walker still taking hit ups off the kickoff. I think he had 17 passes. Did spend a little bit of time at dummy half, but not much, because Freddie Lussick was fantastic at dummy half, and he's the second string hooker. He had kicks, he had offloads, he had dummy half runs. He was just as influential as Wade Egan. And when you think about those Aussies, your mate Jackson Ford, he was pretty good, wasn't he?
He was sharp.
That dude rips in. Marcelo Montoya, good Aussie. Freddie Lussick, good Aussie. Dylan Walker, good Aussie. Mitchell Barnett didn't play. He's a good Aussie as well. So we always big up these Kiwi vibes with the Warriors. I've talked about Nickel Clarkstar, Tamari Martin, Marata Niokori, the Mangere Mountain, Tohu Harris, of course, got to mention Sean Johnson. Well, do we? We do. I did like Sean Johnson's game. He was influential.
We scored the winning try. So
he was good. But Warriors fans can't view Sean Johnson as the savior, because there's so much else going on in this Warriors team that it is excellent that Shawn Johnson is just playing his part. He's just playing his role. But there's also a lot of good Aussies in this team that the Warriors have recruited. What else do I have here? Nothing. It was a good Warriors win. And the Warriors are pretty good. The other thing, sorry. 2-1 victory over the Bulldogs on the club day. So New South Wales Cup had a victory over the Bulldogs. SG Ball, they had a loss. So the Warriors this season have had club days against the Roosters, Knights and Bulldogs. They won the Knights one, 2-1. They lost the Roosters one, 1-2. They won this Bulldogs one, 2-1. So there's a lot of 2-1s here that I'm spitting out. But in the club day situation, the Warriors are 2-1 up. So you could make a case that the Warriors are in better positions across their three grades. Other teams have more grades, but in these three grades that the Warriors compete in, they have had club day victories over the Knights and the Bulldogs. And I think a lot of the same trends are in that New South Wales Cup team. Zion Mai'u'u is a legitimate monster. Dimitrios Sifakula was fantastic on the right edge. You had Moala Graham Telfer scored a hat-trick. Halasima, he's the only dude who's played SG Ball and New South Wales Cup this season. Apparently he is 17 years old. I don't believe it because that is ridiculous. But regardless of the age, all you need to know is he was a star for the SG Ball team. Now he's playing New South Wales Cup. That is impressive. And I think the whole experience of the game day against the Bulldogs was pretty impressive. But the way the Warriors defeated the Bulldogs in this game, They were better than the Bulldogs. They were better defensively. They were better with the football. And they had a better game plan. They got the job done. Onwards and upwards. Deep in your mangroves.
Well, I'll tell you who else. It wasn't quite you can't call it a club day, but I would call it a club weekend. You know who else had a good club weekend victory? Was the All Whites against China. You know, a win and a draw in the senior games and two wins in the in the under 23 games, so there you go. But I'm not talking about the All Whites for a third segment in a row. I'm going to talk about David Light here, because David Light, Kiwi cruiserweight boxer, fought Lawrence Okolie, Englishman, for a world title over the weekend on Sunday, and I'm not entirely sure why this didn't get like more coverage than it did. I got caught lacking myself, I'll admit, in the lead up. I meant to write about it on the Friday email, but I was out of town and got confused and forgot about it. Also partly though, because I I was expecting to have my memory jogged by just a whole bunch of stories of leading up to it, but whatever. So it goes. David Light lost to Okolie over 12 rounds, unanimous decision. Okolie had been a year out of the ring and was probably a little bit rusty, but he's also the established champion. He had a significant size advantage, able to cause a fair bit of trouble because of that, which led to Light having to fight him inside a lot more than he would have liked, which led to Okolie settling into the grapples and the clinches and getting the referee involved a whole lot, which led to crowd frustrations that are what they viewed as apparently, I guess a boring contest. It wasn't the most entertaining one going around, but I never quite understand the entitlement from fans to boo at stuff because it's not exciting enough. I know you paid money for it, but also like it's not catered to your experience. It's a title fight with these guys. This is their career culmination kind of thing. Anyway, Light did have a couple rare signs of being able to catch Okolie, but it didn't happen very often, and it became pretty clear that the rounds were tallying up against him, and it was just one of those ones where, like, felt like he'd done superbly to get himself into position for a title fight, but he was just overmatched at the final hurdle. Can't complain about that. Can't complain when you lose to the better fighter. Can't complain when you lose to the better fighter, given it the best crack that you got. And as often as Light was put under pressure by Okolie, particularly in the latter rounds, it happened quite a lot. He took some proper damage there, but he withstood every attempt from Okolie to back himself a stoppage. fought through them heavy hits, never went down, emerges therefore from defeat with his reputation enhanced, I would suggest. I think he's a much better, a much more renowned fighter for having gone the distance against a dude like Okoli, who himself, you know, is talking about, once I dominate the cruiserweight division, I'll do like what Usyk did, and I'll step up into the heavyweights. And you know, Light's just got to keep himself around for the next swing at it. Yeah, gritty, hardy performance from a West Auckland Kiwi boxer who's had to show a lot of grit and a lot of heart to get throughout his entire career to get anywhere near this point, let alone to as far as he did. Can't win them all, but you can always give it your best shot, and that's what we saw from David Light on Sunday morning. So he lost, but he lost with mana. We'll give him that.
Was it like a impressive loss that I talked about with the Warriors losing to the Roosters, or was it more like a loss with mana? Like a loss, but you can still hold your head high.
Yeah, the latter. There was no doubt. Even when the... I think his trainer Isaac Peach had a couple points about like the refereeing not being up to scratch, but even then it was like, because every time a boxing fight finishes, one corner is going to say, if it goes to a decision, one corner is going to say it was rigged, we should have won. Like everyone has that argument. Peachy was just like, the referee should have been better at adjudicating the in close stuff, but it wouldn't have changed the result. Like even at that point, no one was arguing the thing. He was clearly the second best fighter in the ring, but you know, he never got knocked out. He went the distance. He fought through some pressure. He brought a game plan that really frustrated his opponent. I think the best case of success for him, apart from the fact that he did go the distance, is also looking at the reaction of people criticizing Okoli for not being able to stop him. I think that's always a good sign for a fighter when you're, when your opponent, even though they win, still comes away feeling like, I don't know, underwhelmed somehow.
Question time. Another question coming up. We've got fresh vibes for the All Whites and the Black Caps. I'm curious, like, of the newish kind of players that we've seen over the last couple of days, who are your favourites? Who are your favourite fresh All Whites? Not necessarily debutants. Don't need to go that far. But I will say, who are your favourite fresh All Whites and Black Caps?
Well, on the All Whites count, I mean, 75% of the team is fresh still, so I can probably get away with saying Marko Stamenić, because I adored watching Marko. I watched him in the Auckland game, I watched it in person, and the other one I watched it on telly. He's just a fantastic player, and a midfielder who can do the stuff that he does is incredible. And Joe Bell does most of the same things as well, which is also incredible to have two of the fellas, because you can at least, you can't always guarantee that they'll both be available, but you can hope at least one of them will be most windows, which is pretty nice. It's just a luxury I've never experienced before, so I find it hard not to indulge in watching. It depends on what your definition of world class is, but I mean, Stamenić was pretty good playing as a defensive midfielder against Manchester City not that long ago. He's a good player, and the way he collects the ball, just sort of rolling on it so he can, like, collecting it on the turn, that's just, he's a step ahead of most dudes. Love that. Black Caps, where are we drawing the line with Frischer? Because if I'm looking at the squad that played that game against Sri Lanka, I mean, obviously, wider scope, nothing soothes the soul better than watching Kane Williamson score runs, but that's not what we're talking about. Does Daryl Mitchell still count as a new Black Cap? Because I never watch Daryl Mitchell and think anything less than, I'm going to have a good time here, I want nothing more than this guy to score big runs. Or even when he bowls, it's exciting because I feel like he doesn't get to bowl enough. Definitely bowling Daryl Mitchell is a fresh one. The six that Will Young hit down the ground was absolutely gorgeous. It was the shot of the day from anyone. But that's also, Daryl Mitchell hits one of those every innings. Daryl Mitchell does that all the time. It's amazing. Is that safe enough? Otherwise, I might have to, I don't know who's... we'll give the younger guys a bit more time. Rachin Ravindra has some potential there. He's a very fun cricketer.
Just keep him moving.
We'll keep him moving though, sure. I do have a good question back in your direction, because old mate Will Warbrick, you've just written a bit of a piece about him. He's a winger, isn't he, for the Melbourne Storm. And it seems that the gist of this is that he's a very typical kind of Melbourne Storm discovery. You want to sort of explain the theory behind that?
Yeah, I don't know if he's a typical Melbourne Storm discovery, but he is a prototypical Melbourne Storm winger. The discovery is right. Interesting because he does have a multi-sport background as far as playing league, union. He also played AFL, which if you go into the Warbrick family history, that's exactly what his ancestors did, is play all three of those codes as well. So he's got that. That could be part of a trend, because if you think back to like Matt Duffy, he had a bit of an AFL background in New Zealand as well. So there is that skill set. But it's just more the prototypical Melbourne Storm winger as far as like good under the high ball, fast, which means you want to get the ball to him early on the flank. Because if he's got some space, he's big, he's powerful, and he's got like his sevens background in rugby union, you get a bit of that swerve, you get a bit of like, there's more space, but you're still going to be one-on-one, but you're one-on-one with more space. So if you're, like some of his highlights from Sunshine Coast, he's bursting down the last season with Sunshine Coast because the Melbourne Storm did a great job of just leaving him in Q Cup. But he's bursting down the sideline, and the fullback's coming across from the middle of the field. A couple of times last season, Warbrick just, swerved infield and just ran around the fullback infield. So he can swerve either way, and I think that's something that you get from playing with more space in rugby union. But he's also fantastic in the air. He's tall, so you think Xavier Coates is the other winger. Will Warbrick is pretty similar to a Xavier Coates. So there's your prototypical Melbourne Storm wing situation. He can make a line break from halfway. So they've got the Storm love an early shift. So they can go early on halfway to give Warbrick or Xavier Coates space. But then you've also got the finishing from like 5 meters out and that kind of stuff. But the discovery bit could be interesting considering like the Melbourne Storm signed him after he won an Olympic sevens medal. So like, I wonder how many other NRL clubs were interested or how many super rugby teams were interested, because if the Melbourne Storm come calling, that's where I'm going to go. And I don't think like, yeah, I don't know how many other NRL clubs would have had the foresight, the planning, the preparation to actually get Warbrick involved and give him the time to develop, because he did play all season in reserve grade last year for Sunshine Coast and absolutely dominated. Musical Jam, we got a new project from Navy Blue. He's got his new project Ways of Knowing. So if they do drop Navy Blue quite a lot in the Musical Jam segments, but he's got a new project Ways of Knowing, which is basically just healing, recuperation, and mindfulness in hip-hop form. What's your Musical Jam?
Well, there's a new tune from Corey Hansen of the band Want. His last solo album was one of my favorites from about 2 or 3 years ago. So the idea of him having a new one coming out is very exciting. And then a couple Kiwi albums. There's an album from Surf Friends that just came out last week or the week before. And Vera Allen's new one comes out on Friday. I believe Friday, and I think the third and final single came out today, this morning. I haven't even listened to it yet, so I will do that as soon as we finish. Recording, but yeah, we're into the thick of the year now, where the musical projects are flowing a lot more freely than they were in the first couple months. It's a good busy time for finding them tunes.
Booyakasha. We will be back on Thursday with another episode of the Niche Cast. Make sure you check out our website, theniche-cast.com. Got lots of yarn happening there. Big up yourself. Enjoy Aotearoa. And we'll see you soon. Kia kaste, beautiful church.